Our next presenter is Bob Surrett of Shively Labs. And we're talking about introducing him. He says, why don't you just introduce me with, here's Bob.
Or Bob is back, whatever.
Bob is back.
Okay, here we go. I appreciate y'all inviting me back. It's always a pleasure. This is a great group. This year, it was suggested that I do something on basic filter design, and it didn't work. Okay. Yeah. Oh. All right. Basic filter design, and so I called it the building block of combiners. One way or another, if you're in a common site, you're either going to have filters or you're going to have combiners. So I looked at some stuff and I thought I would start, a little distorted. Back in 1939, a fellow by the name of Philip Smith, mathematician, was doing some work with some conformal mapping. And it turns out when I was in college, back in the late 60s, I had a math instructor by the name of a guy named Stanchel, who actually worked with Smith to come up with this chart, which is basically a calculator. And I put this up because everything we did, everything I was basically taught by Ed Shively, everything I've been involved with over the years, has to do with the Smith chart. And one turn around the Smith chart, 360 degrees, is a half wave. So when we talk about standing waves and things like that, it happens every half wave. So you once around the chart, you do a half wave. Halfway around the chart, you're a quarter wave, 90 degrees. And we use that principle, I guess, in coming up with bandwidth in filter systems. When we talk about, when we talk about Q, and Gary said something about in TV, use Q a lot, everything is based on a tuned network has a value of Q associated, whether it's a hardware lump constant cans and filters like I use, or small little printed circuit boards. It's Q. And I try to get a decent definition of Q and an equation for Q, but the basic system is you take F0 and divide it by the frequency delta that takes it to go plus or minus from the real axis plus or minus 1J or J1. And that's basically defined as the half power points of a filter. You can do it with antennas. Again, it's just any tuned circuit and you deal with a quantity called Q. You're basically looking at how fast it progresses across that arc. Back in the days, and I keep saying that, I'm getting too old here. This actually was a kit put together on the old Tektronix scope. It had four inputs. You basically took five diodes and you put them 1/8 wave apart so you could go around a circle. So the first and last one compensated, so you end up with a circle. And you actually take, and with a delay line, you would actually rotate frequency. And as long as you came up with a pure circle, you could take and measure anything you wanted with on that Smith chart. And that's where all the calculations were done. Today, we've got equipment. I think they actually are computers. You plug this in and it does all the math and puts a pretty screen up, and I don't know how to turn some of the stuff on. So I have to go back to where I started and what I did with it. I was going to go back to say about Q, one of the things that Ed Shively did is when we started building filters, when I got involved in building filters, he would calculate the size of the filter because he always wanted to make sure that he built things. If it only needed to be a 4-inch diameter tube to be a notch filter, he would make it 4 inches. He wouldn't make it 5 or 6. It was always small. He thought small was, the smaller it was, the less expensive it was to build. But it was just the other way around. It took more to do it. So I had to always measure Q. I mean, you just go back and forth and make it a Q. Nowadays, what we basically look at is just say, what do we need for a filter to give us the isolation required for the system? So if you were looking at a single bandpass cavity and you said, I want the VSWR to be under 1.1 to 1, you'd say, okay, I'm going to go and say for plus or minus 200 kilohertz, so I'm going to make it 1.1 to 1, and the transmitters are going to love it. The problem is, if you take a single bandpass cavity and you tune that cavity so that the standing wave is under 1.1 to 1, you only will get 3 or 4 dB of isolation, 5, 6, 7, 8 megs away. And if you're trying to put two stations together that are like 800 kilohertz away, a single cavity just will not work. So you say, okay, a single cavity isolation won't give you what you need. So you take it and you sweep it a little, you retune the filter, the losses get a little higher, and you say, well, can I work with a 1.2 to 1? And as you go through it, you say, I don't have enough isolation. So let's go for something a little different. And from experience, if you take this out to about a 1.4 to 1 at plus or minus 200 kilohertz, you end up with enough isolation to allow you to filter the other stations away. The problem is that 1.4 to 1, the transmitter is going to hate you. It's just going to be swinging back and forth. You're going to have, the modulation is going to change with VSW is going to change with modulation, all kinds of stuff. So what we do is we said, well, let's take a second filter and let's put it a quarter wave away, 90 degrees. And it's called quadrature match. So this frequency adds with this, and that frequency adds with that, and you end up with a V. So now you've doubled your isolation, you made the transmitter happy, and because you made that exact V, that's basically plus or minus 100 kilohertz, so you slide it over a little bit, and that's just by tweaking the tuning of the filters, you end up with a bandpass system that is under 1.1 to 1 for plus or minus 200 kilohertz, and the transmitter is very happy. And you have isolation. If you need more isolation, you add another filter. You add it a quarter wave down the line. So instead of having two filters with one little notch, you have three filters with two loops. If you go to four filters, you end up with three loops, and 5 and 6 along the line. Now, in a lot of cases, a four-cavity filter will give you all the isolation you need. At 800 kilohertz, a four-cavity filter will give you about 20 dB of isolation. If you're going to put that into a balanced combiner system, and I'll go through that shortly, you'll end up with 50 plus dB of isolation between the transmitters. Nowadays, people are talking about 600 kilohertz, and in some places, they're saying, let's do a translators at 400 kilohertz. Where's your filter for 400 kilohertz? We played with a 5, we played with a 6, and it becomes very big. When I mentioned Q at the start, the size of the cavities determine part of that Q. In order to get the isolation at 400 kilohertz, you're talking about in a standard filter, you've got to get somewhere around 40 dB of isolation at 400 kilohertz. And it just doesn't happen in a band pass situation. You've got to do all kinds of stuff. And the filters get very big. So a fellow with a translator that says, I want to do 400 or 600 kilohertz, you're going to tell him he's going to put in a 30 kilowatt size filter that he's going to put 300 watts in. But that's what happens to that, because in order to get the isolation, it's a matter of physics. The bigger the filter, the better the Q, the more isolation. This is something I built a million years ago. And as I said, Ed Shively would always make it, if he could have made all this the same, all the same cavities, but he didn't. Smaller, these are notch cavities. These are notches. These are two band passes. So he's got two band passes and two notches. From the center of this cavity to the center of that cavity, electrically, is a quarter wave. Because the cavity itself has electrical length. A four-cavity filter will have about the equivalent of 600 feet of coax in delay time going through it. So each filter has its own, what do you want to call it, electrical length from the center of the cavity out to the edge of the cavity. So we inductively loop coupled energy in, goes around the cavity, goes to the next cavity. These are band pass. Those are rejects, and the same thing. Those are a quarter wave apart, and because they're smaller cavities, there's less electrical length within the cavity, so that's why it's mechanically different. But they're all quarter wavelength apart. In combining, notice that these lengths are different. This is not exactly halfway between. And the reason for that is this line length here has to be such that this frequency sees an open circuit here, so that 50 ohms up to the antenna, and vice versa. These filters here have to see an open circuit here, and so these line lengths are critical the other way around. Okay? This is what filters look like today. Instead of being round, they're square. And you inductively loop energy in. It's kind of hard to see here, but on this top there's a cover, and there's actually a slot at the top of the cavity. So you inductively loop in, you slot or magnetically couple energy to the next, magnetically couple energy to the next, and then you loop out. So you've eliminated feet of coax in between the filters. I'm not sure that shows up, but there's actually a line there, and here, that slot is, the filter I showed you before is a 24-inch square filter. That slot is only an inch deep inside. It's all magnetic coupling. So the energy comes in, resonates in here, goes to this opening, and inductively couples energy there. So computers today are unbelievable. For years, in my mind, I visualized what happened inside filters. You know, it goes in, loops out, and kind of. So if you went to tune something, or if there was a problem with something, you could almost visualize what's happening to the fields inside the cavity. Well, one of our younger associates, he's not an engineer, but he can be an engineer. He just doesn't have a ticket. He did this for me on a computer. And what you have here is the energy comes here and is inductively coupled into here. And as I go through this, you'll see that the energy goes across that opening, induces currents in here in the same direction. Now, if they're the same direction here, then from here to here, they're a quarter wave of difference because they're rotating the other direction. I can't believe this. I can show this. I was amazed at how the computer did this. And what's happening here, even though it looks like this is kind of rotating back, it's just decaying. The fields in the cavity are transversing through the cavity at the FM frequency. So the fields enlarge and then they dissipate. So this is just showing that the fields are actually transferring across from one cavity to the next. If I put it in motion, that's a three-cavity filter. And something interesting that came out here is that, and it's hard to tell, but the fields in this cavity are about the same as the fields in this cavity, but the fields in this cavity are actually a little bit less. Insertion loss. It's as simple as that, conservation of energy. But that's how that works through it. Now, let me go to the next one. Let me back up one. In 1975, we put a combiner into Miami. It was the first square filter system in the US, I believe. And Ed Shively designed it. And one of the key things about his design is that he was always used to round cavities. And his concern was is that right in here at these four corners, there would be excessive fields and it would cause ripple through the filter. And we actually took and drilled holes in the cavities looking for the fields, and we found none. As you go out, the fields reduce. We found none there and there. And the computer, here it is, 30 years later, and the computer actually validated that there are no fields in the corners. It acts like it's a round system because it's a round interconductor. That's the electric field coming off, because in an RF environment, there's both magnetic and electrical fields, and that's what it represents. The computer even though those are metal surfaces and the fields are not out there, the computer wants them out there. And it's called an evanescent wave, but that's what that's out there is. And it's just what the computer wants to show. Now, if I go to the next one, that's a combination of electrical and magnetic fields going through the filter system. And the computer, I could have done several different versions of that, and it just amazed me how the computer did that. If you told somebody 20 years ago that that's what you were visualizing, they'd say you were on LSD, I think. This here is what's called an interdigital filter. It doesn't have any walls. So the cavities, the inner conductor, there's one here, there's one here coming up, and one here going down. So it's a three-cavity filter. It's just a lower-powered filter. It turns out that mechanically, with an interdigital filter, there are no walls in the middle, and you end up with when you get to a 12-inch cavity, the walls have to be so big that it becomes uneconomical to use interdigital for bigger filters, because the walls want to buckle, and if the walls buckle, there's so much, you have to put so much mechanical strength on the walls that it takes away from the cost of the system. It adds to the cost of the system. So that's a three-cavity interdigital filter, and that's the magnetic fields that couple from here. There are no walls, so it's direct coupling from one inner to the next to the next. And of course, like this inner conductor is grounded at the top, this one is at the bottom, this one is at the top. So they're basically quarter wave stubs inside of a chamber. Those are the electric fields that grow through the system. same as the iris or slot-coupled filters. In order to tune these filters, you end up just changing the spacing. Instead of changing the wall thickness or the aperture through here, you directly couple to the inner, depending on where you grab it. And what the spacing is how you change the different values that go through the filter. That's the, I guess you'd call it a 3D version of both electrical and magnetic fields passing through the system. Quarter wave stub, quarter wave this way, quarter wave that way. It's something I looked at while I was watching this. I thought when we set this up, this was the input and that's the output. But if you look at this, the fields between these two is actually stronger than the fields between these two. So I'm not sure if when he did his program, he got it the other way. But again, that's what's happening inside filters. I got time for a couple of questions. Has anybody's got just a question that I've got more to go, but I'll answer questions if anybody's. Sir.
It's always seemed to me that the iris between the filters is too small to work. How big is it electrically, and how can so much energy couple through that small slot?
Well, it is a small slot. It's less than an eighth wave, and an eighth wave is only about 15 inches. So it's less than an eighth wave, and you are doing magnetic coupling through it. It's a direct magnetic couple system. So we get the size of the filter. I mean, we're on a 24-inch filter, we can put 60 kilowatts with a 4-inch input and a 4-inch out. We can put 60 kilowatts through one of those, and it only has that iris that is, it's an inch tall, and it's approximately 14 inches long.
Do you think that's a related effect to like mutual coupling between antenna elements? I mean, is that the same kind of thing? Just trying to visualize
it. I'm not sure, and I see what you're going, but the mutual between an antenna system and, I guess if you put two antennas that close to each other, they would talk really well. And
yeah.
I think that's what the filters are doing.
I see.
Okay? Let me punch on and we'll have some more questions. We'll have time for questions after this. The three-cavity filter, again, just want to say, there it is. And that's the frequency response of a three-cavity filter. It's a 24-inch cavity. It's got just over a quarter dB insertion loss, and it's got all kinds of isolation. It's got high Q values, so you get a lot of isolation with really not a lot of filter. Back in the days, instead of having two bandpass and two notches, we ended up having three bandpass and just one notch. And when you do combiners, if you put two filters together, two systems together, they have to have more than 40 dB of isolation. If two transmitters see any energy of less than 40 dB, like 36 dB, they will generate spurts. At 40 dB, maybe. At 43 dB, they won't. We usually go for a total of 10 dB more than you need and go from there. So we used to put notches in. And when you do that, you get a frequency response, and there's the notch from the other frequency, which is around 50 dB. And on the other side, did the same thing. Even though the curves are a little bit different, the end result was just fine. We ended up two-station combiner at 50 dB separation. Well, that's what we used to do. And now, instead of having band notch filters in a system, we have band pass. And what you do is you take and you connect the forward cavity back down to the back cavity, and they're just feedbacks on either side. And they call them, instead of notches, they call them nulls in the characteristics of the filter. So it looks like that, which is similar to if you had a notch filter. So you've actually put a notch internally within this bandpass system. So as we've progressed through the years, we've come up better solutions to do the same thing in smaller space and things like that, saving hardware. In this case, we got lots of isolation. So it's just, we didn't need that much, but it was there, so you take it. I talked about the distance between this distance here is a function of this frequency, and this distance here is a function of that frequency. That's a long path. And I think what happened here is that when we did the original math, the distance between the junction and this wall was so mechanically close that we couldn't mechanically put it together. So we added a half wavelength of coax and came up with the same solution. Once around the chart, you get a repeat of where you started from. It's terrible. 1991. That I don't even recognize that writing, and it was me. This is how we calculated the length of line between the end of the filter, by the end of the filter to the junction. And in this case, I came out with 16 odd inches, and the other was 62 inches. And it took, 20 minutes or something like that? It took me 20 minutes just to write it out. Today, it takes 30 seconds. They literally have examples of all this stuff. These all represents the different components within the filter. And in this case here, they ended up with 8 inches and 75 inches. The problem with the way I used to do it is I would get close and could spend a couple hours just trimming and tweaking. I don't know if you've ever used a, if you have an RG213 cable and you need to make it a little shorter, you clip it. You try to do that with a 2, 3 1/8 inch coax, and you go out in the bandsaw or whatever and do that stuff. So it took a long time. And it was just a function of what it took to tune a filter system. The computers today, they take and measure the filter into the computer. There's no paper. It's all widgets or zeros and whatever it is. And the computer comes out, and that number there will be within 1/8 of an inch. It took hours out of tuning a system. It's just amazing how that all works. We can do three. Now, this happens to be a three-channel system. These are 13-inch cavities. Something I should have said earlier before just hit me. This is 13 inches because that is 4 inches. And the impedance, the optimum impedance for a bandpass filter is 73 ohms. I have no idea why, but that's what it is. You can change it. The efficiencies change and all that stuff. So when these filters were designed, we keep them as close to 73 ohms as you can get them. And you basically do that same calculation. It would take me a week to come up with this if I did it by hand. Between doing it by hand and cutting, the computers just say, here it is, and that's what you do, and they put it all together. And this one here has feedback loops. The first time we did a feedback loop system, we tuned it, everything was perfect, the curves were great, and we sent it out. And it was a 24-inch system with a 7/8 rigid line in the middle. And it was putting 30 kilowatts into the filter. And the guy called us up and he said, your line just burnt up. And we went, no way. How could that 7/8 line burn up? Well, if you're not careful, and you only make the mistake once, if you're not careful, instead of just taking a sample of this energy and feeding it back and getting a notch, you actually couple that 30 kilowatts across that 7/8 line. And we all know what happens to a 7/8 line with 30 kilowatts, and it lasts about 3 or 4 seconds. There's no such thing as a small arc, right? Okay, I'm gonna keep moving here unless somebody's got a quick question. Yes, sir. Wait a minute, hold on.
When tuning your filters and cavities, do they need to be heated to operating temperature with an external heat source?
99.9% of the time, I can't say 100% because we've had it happen to us. 99.9% of the time, if your filter is made with a Invar rod, that is the adjustment, the frequency adjustment component. If the filter cavities remain the same, if the interconductor stays constant, and you can look at the temperature deviation of Invar, you can run that cavity from, Ed Shively didn't like to pay oil heat in the winter, so we had it, the lab was around 60 degrees in the wintertime, and those cavities were cold. And we could tune them cold and ship them south and put them under full power, and you never know the difference. Now, after saying that, we put 60 kilowatts through one of those sets of cavities with blowers. And when the room temperature went to 110 degrees, the filter changed. But that's a lot of power with a lot of temperature. I think the interconductor was, what do they say? The interconductor of a transmission line running at rated power is 200 degrees. So it was pretty hot. And if you looked at the coefficient of the Invar, it probably took it 25 kilohertz, something like that. Okay, balance combiners. There are the building block or the backbone of a balanced combiner system. Now, what I've shown you before is branch combiners, star point branched, however you want to label them. You're basically bringing filters into a central point and then tuning the filter system so it works like that. We've done several four-station branch combiners. The problem with making bigger branches is that the mechanics of where you put it all together limit how you can do that. So you say, let's do a 5 or 6 station star point. Well, it would be like taking and making a circle out of those cavities, and you end up with something that's very large. In one installation, we have a 2-station combiner where each filter set is around a corner of a room. They didn't have a lot of room in the whole thing, so he went here and went at 90 degrees, but it worked out perfectly. In balanced systems, which allow you to add stations at the end, if you want, they have probably a better VSWR overall, but a balanced system works in several ways. It's kind of like magic. If we've ever had two transmitters, same frequency, you put power in, you phase the exciter correctly, and you get power out, which is double what you brought into it. Basic hybrid splitter. If you run the hybrid in the other direction, and you put half the power in, full power in here, it will split in half. Some of the phone company stuff, cell stuff, they will use hybrids, and because they're working on so little power, they don't care if they lose half. They just let that go into a dummy load. So you have half and half. Now there's a third operating thing that I didn't show here, I probably should have, but what will happen is, if I go back one, if you put a short circuit or an open circuit here, short circuit is better, but you can do it with an open circuit. If you put energy in here, it will literally bounce and go back out this way. So in a balanced combiner module, a hybrid works in 3 modes at the same time. And each mode does not affect the other mode. Nope, wait a minute, too far. Come on, There we go. Okay, that's the third. Now, back in the days, I think Andy Alford did a lot of this in Chicago on the Sears building. Well, we can't, can we call, we still call it the Sears building, can we? Whatever it is now, I don't remember it, but it's Sears to me. They had coax on the walls. And what he had was what's called a run-out combiner. And you went, okay. Communicating line combiner, communicating time corner, or a run-out combiner. And what you do here is one station comes in here, comes out of here, because of the phase relationship here and here, all the energy comes out there. If you had a combination you wanted to put, if we did it the other way, you put energy in here and it would come out there. Life would be wonderful. Well, we started running combining systems. There are a couple out there which actually only used one hybrid. They put a filter back here, put two stations with notch filters. And what you end up doing is you end up taking the difference frequency. You get the delta frequency. And what you're actually going to do is you're going to take the low frequency and let that run as long as it has to. You take the difference frequency, and we want to have half wave, because it happens every half wave. So if you look at this number here, that's that old magic number of 11803 divided by the frequency gives you wavelength in inches. So if you take that value, which is going to be half wave, is the length of line that you add to the high frequency. So the low frequency runs to the antenna, the high frequency has to catch up to it, so you add length of line, and when they finally come out to that same wavelength, they add together. And depending on back, the first ones were done where they put notch filters back here, then you had the runout lines going up to each half of the antenna. By putting two hybrids, you put two frequencies in, and depending on which way you put the extra line in will depend on the power flow, whether it goes this way or that way. And mechanically, when you put a balanced combiner into a room, the power flow is going to be either this way towards the antenna or that way towards the antenna. It depends on the physical layout of the building, but it can go either way. Not bad. I think I have this. There you go. Instead of using notch filters, almost the whole world now does bandpass filtering. And it depends whether you want to use two filters in here or three filters or four filters. It really doesn't matter. As long as the two filters are exactly the same in tuning. If they're exactly the same, and with the new gear, used to be we'd look at a filter, you'd take the test gear and you look in this port, then you'd come over here and look at this port, then you look at that port, and you'd try to balance that tuning so they're all the same. Now what they do is they put one machine that's got four ports and they just tweak it and it's all done. Tuning time has gone from hours, days, to a couple of hours. So it really doesn't matter what you have here. And if you put your input here, this is usually a narrow band dummy load, it's like 35 dB. The output simply goes to the antenna. You can add stations into here. And what you find when you do your adding stations, your bandpass filters act like short circuits to these other frequencies. So this hybrid lets you bounce the frequencies out. If there's any leakage at all, this comes back here, it actually comes into that dummy load. When we, quick story, back on 9/11, the one of the FM stations wanted to go into the broadband port of the ERI combiner at the Empire State Building. And we got a call and said, do we have a bandpass filter? And we, yeah, we got one of those. And it was, they only want to put a couple of kilowatts, so it wasn't very big. And so we put it in. They called us on a Thursday night. We shipped it Friday. They installed it on Saturday. It had an elbow on it, so they changed the tuning. So we drove to the Empire on Sunday and tuned it. On Monday, I got a call from Tom Silliman because I had ruined his balance combiner. And the whole bit was, is we plugged in a station here with a bandpass filter, and we measured the amount of power out of here. Now, they had like a 16-frequency combiner, and there was only like 10 watts coming out of here. There was virtually nothing. But he was afraid that the energy coming back here would bounce back and get into the input of the antenna. And it took him just a couple of minutes to realize that that energy would go back into that own dummy load. So a balanced combiner can be used in many different ways to combine stations. And if you've got a little guy on the end of a big system, you can put a little filter back here and be on the air. I can't believe it's gone that quick. Nope. There we go. That's what the VSWR curve looks like of a balanced combiner. That's one circle, and that's actually a whole meg. So the band, the basic characteristics of a bandpass filter in a balanced combiner are the same. In a branch combiner, the pass characteristics are all the same. The difference is that the VSWR of a balanced combiner is much broader than that of a branch combiner. Wow. Okay. Any questions? I got 2 minutes, a minute and a half. Boy, wind me up, and I just thank you. There you go.